The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
Greetings from the heartland of America. Just back from an invigorating walk with Sam T. Dachshund. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert. And I'm quite proud to say that that was a productive walk, according to what you
yes.
reported when you came back. And I'm sure everyone on West Mechanic Street is laughing even now.
Yeah, it was pretty amusing because once Sam had done his business, not once, not twice, but thrice.
Oh, a triple.
Yeah, he decided to run all the way home. Well, from where we were anyway, which was
And mind you, when you're walking Sam, being that he is a rather, you know, he's not exactly a huge dog. And I personally, and I know you do as well, when he's pulling on the leash, you don't want to choke him.
No.
So you just go with it.
Right. So I'm not sure which the afternoon rush hour thought was more amusing, Sam with his ears flapping in the wind or...
You with your ears flapping
yes,
in the wind.
That's right. So anyway, it was quite entertaining. Sam will sleep well tonight.
Well, it's Friday.
It is November 19th, 2010. Thank you for inviting us inside your audio device. And
and you're going to be in their audio devices this evening from 10 to midnight.
Yes,
Eastern
should make a program note. Of course, that's at blogtalkradio.com/PID radio. Had planned two guests for tonight. Carl Teichrib, the chief editor of Forcing Change, has graciously consented now to step up and fulfill both hours. And given that we have a lot to talk about, Forcing Change is an intelligence newsletter that deals with globalism in all its various forms, economic, political, religious. And we've got a lot to talk about, especially after his visit to the Transhumanist Conference in Salt Lake City, sponsored by the Mormon Transhumanist Association. His new issue of Forcing Change is titled Rise of the Techno Gods. So we'll talk about that.
Ooh, good title. So he's doing 2 hours.
Doing 2 hours. William H. Kennedy, the author of Lucifer's Lodge, was going to be on for hour number two, and he sent an email this morning at about 4:30 a.m., and you could actually feel the physical pain coming through the email.
Mm.
He's a good writer. Basically, he suffered a medical emergency, not life-threatening, but to the best of my knowledge, very painful, and it was going to put him in the hospital. And so we'll follow up with him.
So keep him in your prayers.
Amen
please.
To that, yes. So we will reschedule with William H. Kennedy soon. But Carl Teichrib will be on for both hours tonight. And, of course, we'll have much to discuss.
Well, here's what I have to ask you.
Yes.
And all of our listeners as well. If you're planning on buying a new car next year,
mm-hmm.
anyone going to buy a new car? Anyone going to open a bank account? Anyone going to do anything at all that requires that they get a loan?
Hmm.
Or deal with a financial institution.
Well, I'd say probably a lot of people.
Well, according to the Intelligencer, this is what will happen beginning January 1st.
Hmm.
The new red flags rule mandate requires that all lenders or financial institutions make sure you are not a terrorist.
Really?
And then make sure that you are you. Now, I personally believe that they should make sure that if you are opening a bank account in your name, that you are really you.
Sure, absolutely.
So I'm for that. But
I don't know. I think we should file a lawsuit because that's invasive and divisive, just like in the federal government suing Arizona.
Well, exactly.
I shouldn't
have
to show
ID. They're going
to
ask for a Social Security number, birth date, and you have to answer at least five questions that are designed to confirm that you are you. And they may be things like, what were your previous addresses,
mm-hmm.
area codes where you once lived, and maybe even members of your household.
How many points did you score in the final round of the Illinois High School Debate Team Championships in 1980?
Oh, I don't know. Can I have personal household people for 500, please?
Yeah. I mean, that's almost like, you know, that's almost like what happened during World War II.
Look, they
during
ask
the Battle
you enough
of Bulge.
Information when you're applying for a loan anyway. And, yeah. And here's the question. Why, when you're doing a bank account,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're handing them money.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. What it does do is just as with the guidelines that FBI Director Mueller has been pushing for the last 2 years, which would require Internet service providers to keep browser history on all users for up to 2 years, it essentially makes the banks now, like the ISPs, de facto agents of the national security
apparatus.
Well,
it does, and they have been for a while, because as you and I both know, mm-hmm. we know people. We know people.
Yes.
Don't mess with us. We know people. But we know of some people who have recently had a terrible time at the bank mm-hmm. just trying to get their own money.
Yeah. Yes, in fact. It really is a bizarre, you know, it's like it's speeding up over the last couple of years.
It is, and I've even had some trouble trying to cash a check, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, look, what is the problem here? It isn't so much that they say we're going to put a hold on this check for so many days or a week or whatever. It's, do you know these people?
Yeah.
I mean, I literally was asked questions about some checks that I've gotten recently. Do you know these people? Do you know where they live? Do you know them?
Before you cash this check, before you deposit this money in our mm-hmm. bank, what can you tell us about these people?
I know my question to the teller and the tellers here in town are really nice was,
sure.
Do you know that bank?
Yeah.
Because if that bank doesn't exist, then I'm in trouble. But if the bank does exist,
then what
just
do you
try
care?
To run it through.
Yeah, then what do you care?
You know, put a hold on it. I don't care.
And frankly, the amount of money that was involved is...
well, you know, we don't want to get into that.
Yeah, but the point is, you're right. The banks...
They even put holds on, you know, when your mom sends me your birthday thing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. That Mrs. Gilbert.
Banks and, obviously, you know, the Transportation Security Administration folks at the airports are part of the national security apparatus, but, you know, just conducting regular financial transactions, the banks apparently now have been drafted into the FBI without their knowledge.
So why isn't the federal government suing the banks for asking for information?
ID.
How dare they do that? State of Arizona isn't allowed to do that at their own borders.
Yeah.
But you and I have to practically strip naked in an airport
yes.
just to get on a plane that we bought a ticket for.
Yeah, exactly. There is no Fourth Amendment in the United States anymore, apparently. It's whatever, you know, the Fourth Amendment only applies when the federal government
there's a bully on the schoolyard, and
yeah.
you know, and that
sadly,
bully, sadly,
his name is Uncle Sam.
Yes, and Uncle Sam is trying to get a rise out of you and me, and he's going to push and push and push and push until you turn into Ralphie and just start
and go nuts,
swinging away.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, you make a good point, and this is something for Christians really to consider. Over the last 2 years, we've seen the rise of the Tea Party movement, which was fueled by an angry reaction to the intrusiveness of the federal government, basically sticking its hand into our pockets and giving the money to General Motors and Chrysler and Wells Fargo and J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs and you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, all of these basically taking money from us and giving them to the people who lost, you know, the money that they'd been given in the first place. So needless to say, a lot of people very angry about this. They caused this economic downturn, and then to fix the downturn, they take more of our money away from us and give it to them. And we see, you know, just we can sense what's going on here. We know we're being fleeced. But when you look at the statistics, it's even worse. You see that there's a story that was published today that the gap between the wealthiest 1% of Americans and the poorest 50% has grown mm-hmm. during the economic downturn.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, wait a minute. These are the people who were supposedly, you know, were ready to fail, and we needed to bail them out because if they failed, then everything would collapse. But they're getting richer. And the number of Americans who've been out of work 6 months or more is at an all-time high.
Hurt not the oil and the wine.
Exactly. And so the anger of the American public And I imagine the same is true in Greece, where the IMF is telling them they have to, submit to austerity measures. And I imagine the same thing is holding true in Ireland, where the EU is got a gun to the head of the Irish and saying, you will submit to the EU. People all over the world are feeling a sense of the same thing. Average folk all over the world are going through pretty much the same thing right now. It's like, to the elites, get off our backs. But as Christians, Romans 13, we're told to submit to civil government, to civil authorities, because they've only got power because God is allowing it. So what is our proper response as Christians? Do we get angry enough to start throwing punches?
Are we being asked? I don't know. Are we being asked to do something that is contrary to God's commandments? Mm-hmm. That is where we have to draw the line.
Right. And
if we are asked to bow down to someone other than God, then we have to say no.
Yeah, exactly, and suffer the consequences. But if what we're being asked is to render unto Caesar, even though we don't like it, well, then we have to render unto Caesar.
Exactly.
Grit our teeth and deal with it.
Do you get the feeling, listener, and I'm talking to you, Derek, as well as the listeners, do you get the feeling that something's about to pop? There's a thickness to this spiritual air around me lately, and it just feels like we are just on the verge of something happening. It's that the birth pangs sort of notion that something is about to be born, and I'm not sure it's good.
Yeah, and we were told to expect this sort of thing. But you're right, it does seem as though we are constantly being prodded with a stick, and have been now for the last couple of years, starting before the Obama administration was sworn in, starting with the Bush administration saying, hey, we got to come up with, let's make up a number here, $712 billion to save the banks. And frankly, they did. They basically just ran some quick numbers and came up with something big.
Well, I know they did, and then Bernanke even admitted it.
They didn't know for sure what they needed.
No,
they just came up with it.
They
managed to snowball Congress and got the money they wanted. They gave it to the banks, who then turned around, and instead of doing what they said they were going to do with the TARP funds, which was to essentially pay off and just kind of wipe up the bad mortgage debts that were clogging the system, and they went and did something completely different with it. And then we got the stimulus money, which didn't stimulate anything. And then we got the bailout of General Motors, which is and Chrysler, which the American public didn't want either. We got the healthcare reform shoved down our throats. We got Fannie and Freddie, which basically instigated the whole global roulette with our mortgages game, Ponzi scheme. Getting more and more of our money, and now they're turning around and saying, "Oh yeah, and now if you want to fly to visit your family this Halloween, we're going to make it such a this Thanksgiving, we're going to make it such a humiliating experience that you thoroughly hate it." You're right.
Trick or treat.
It's like you said. It's almost as though they're trying to provoke an angry response. Dare I say it, violent response from
somebody. I think that's what they're going for. I really do.
So that they can justify cracking down even farther. I mean, because you can't – when you look at it just from the standpoint of, okay, let's assume, point one, that the whole X-ray scanner thing at the airport is truly intended to make flying safer. Well, in response, we point out what that professor from Arizona State University, who's the X-ray expert, he said that the explosive gels and C4 plastic explosives don't show up on those back scanner X-ray
scans. They have those little what they call blowers or puffers that sniff for things. Plus the dogs.
I mean,
there are better ways of finding explosives being carried. They found the underwear guy. We found him. Well, hey, he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
So far, nothing's happened. They found them all. But all of these things, I believe, are plants to get the excuse in place to make oodles and oodles of money on these TSA scanners, which brings me to the next story.
Oh, excellent segue.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks a lot. If you're on a school bus, you're going to have to put your finger on the line.
Oh, so they're making school bus drivers members of the FBI now.
Well, they are.
Those children could be,
Well, you never know. It's here's the deal. Students who ride the bus to and from Ronald Reagan Elementary and Colonel Mitchell Page Middle Schools, mind you, will soon have their fingerprints scanned during every trip. It's the Biometric Observation Security System, BOSS, boss.
Oh, gee.
Don't you love this? This is in California in the Palm Springs area.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, oh, brother.
Big brother
is big sister.
Yeah.
Good heavens. Where are we headed, people? The excuse here is that this allows to make sure that the kids are on the correct bus and that they get on the bus when they're headed home. Bus driver, just get to know your bus kids.
Yes. Yes.
That's what happened. You look, the buses were just as full when I was a kid growing up, and those bus drivers knew every one of us. That first day, they would go through and they'd read off names,
mm-hmm.
and they'd get to know us. And I mean, the bus driver became your friend. Getting on the bus and having to scan your finger and being treated like a criminal on and off the bus
mm-hmm.
doesn't make it a friendly environment, does it?
No, it's conditioning. It's conditioning the kids to accept.
Yes.
Yeah, to accept this sort of invasive observation.
You get on the bus, you get your finger scanned. You go to the airport, you get something else probed.
Yeah, and in Los Angeles, the school system, I believe it's Los Angeles, they've got a new similar scanning device, biometric device, to check fingerprints for kids so they can get their school lunches.
You're kidding.
No.
Whatever happened to the day you just put your little lunch card up there?
Or gave them your 35 cents.
Yes.
No, and here's the ironic thing. One of the reasons given for, and I'll confirm this because I'm remembering this from another podcast that I listened to, but one of the people in the school district who was interviewed about this system, you know, why kids have to be fingerprinted to get their lunches, this person actually said, well, it saves jobs.
What?
I know! Like, what? How does it save jobs? It's crazy. What it does is it saves jobs for the people who are making these biometric scans.
Exactly.
It doesn't jobs in the school district.
Follow the money.
And what it does, again, is it gets kids used to. Look, the next thing that's coming is they're going to make us all wear RFID bracelets so that we can be tracked wherever we are at any given time. And kids will be conditioned from school age on up to believe that this is the way it's supposed to be.
Well,
the
you
only
wait.
Way-
Soon we'll all get our smallpox vaccine, and
yes.
we'll all be marked.
Like the Armageddon strain.
Yes.
Now available.
Well, speaking of vaccines and the like medical things, medical news, I go to this site from time to time that's actually out of Hungary, and it takes a look at events that are occurring worldwide that are important, volcanoes going off and earthquakes and things like that. It also tracks epidemiological problems.
Mm-hmm.
There is something going on in Uganda. There are a couple of areas of Uganda where hemorrhagic diseases are taking off. Now, this isn't anything new in Africa. Hemorrhagic diseases occur there, loss of fever, Ebola, Marburg, sadly. But this is a new one.
Mm-hmm.
This is a new one.
Really?
I'm going to say that again. This is a new one. The site that I go to, excuse me, reads this. A total of 13 people have been reported dead in Abim and Agago districts in Uganda following an outbreak of a strange disease. 20 cases have been reported in this district, out of whom 8 have already died. 20 cases, 8 dead. This is as of this morning. In neighboring Agago district, 5 cases have been reported in the sub-counties of Amia. Sorry, I'm going to just butcher these. I'm not even going to try to pronounce these county names. Emmanuel Okek, who's an official from the Abim District Health Office, said about the 20 cases that, as I say, 8 have died, 2 have been quarantined, and another 10 have been discharged. Mr. Okek also said that samples had been sent to the CDC and to WHO, sorry, World Health Organization, and they have been checked, assuming that they would come back and they would say, well, it's a form of Lassa, it's a form of Ebola, it's a form of Marburg. No. According to Mr. Okek, and I quote, we were suspecting viral hemorrhagic infection, but results from the Uganda Virus Research Institute have ruled out Ebola, Marburg, and Lassa.
Hmm.
This is now being called by its own name. It's being called Abim disease.
Abim.
Abim.
A-B-I-M.
Okay. A-B-I-M. It's in the story, the World Health Organization and Centers for Disease Control are investigating this outbreak that appears to be like Ebola, Marburg, and other hemorrhagic viruses. I'm trying to read from a different story now, so forgive me. Symptoms include high fever, vomiting blood, passing a bloody stool, convulsions, and bleeding from openings like the nose and ears.
Mm.
We do not know, said Dr. Otto, that we are Emmanuel Otto, that we are dealing with what we're dealing with. We do know what is happening, so we must respect the new measures which have been put in place. And they're very strict ones that are commonly done whenever there's a disease that takes place that's very contagious. In this case, they're told what they can and cannot eat, because all too often these things are from eating monkey meat.
Yeah, bush
like
meat,
that.
Yeah.
Bush meat. They've been told not to shake hands, to maintain better personal hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
It goes on and on. The World Health Organization is doing its best to help out in this area. Again, there are two areas of Uganda that have a hemorrhagic disease taking place right now. One of them we know for sure is an unknown agent.
Hmm.
So we need to keep a really sharp eye on what's going on in Uganda. And we pray for everybody there. And I just pray that this is, well, you and I have talked about things that, frankly, there are certain populations that make wonderful laboratories.
Yeah, and while this is going on, there's other news coming out of Africa about Uganda. While you were talking, I did a search for outbreak in Uganda, and the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and the Ugandan Ministry of Health are beginning a massive immunization campaign in Uganda.
Immunization against what?
Polio.
Now, that is something that we that's interesting.
There are a number of
polio
cases.
There is an organization
that
I was just reading about that a couple of days ago. And what organization is it? They have just, gosh, I'll think of it in a minute. I think it's the, you know.
A private company or a government organization?
An NGO.
An NGO. Okay.
That has made it their life's work to eradicate polio.
Mm. Well, there were a number of cases detected in eastern Uganda mid-October last month, and so
So when you see needles going into arms and suddenly there's an outbreak of a new disease, you have to wonder what's going on.
Yeah, well, this round of supplemental polio vaccinations begins tomorrow, November 20th.
It hasn't started yet.
So it will be this weekend, November 20th through Monday, November 22nd. The goal is to immunize over 2 million children over the age of 5, or up to the age of 5, rather, in 48 high-risk districts in the eastern, northeastern, and northern parts of Uganda. This is according to the Ugandan Minister of Health, Dr. Stephen Malinga. They want to eradicate polio in Uganda. But while they've got that going on, and by the way, polio, which has pretty much dropped out of the public consciousness here in the West, I mean, our parents' generation and our grandparents' generation, they knew people who had been affected for life by polio.
Yes. Oh, yes.
My generation, your generation, well, our generation, I should say, and our children's generation here in the United States. Boy.
Oh, honey, you're wonderful. I love you.
men out there all across the world hearing that one going, oh, Derek, you really stepped into that one. Oh. But no, our generation, our children's generation, they don't know from polio, but it is still a threat. A public health threat in other parts of the world. So anyway, Uganda dealing with polio and a polio outbreak, and also dealing with this this strange hemorrhagic fever, which is really puzzling and really disturbing health officials over there. So that's going on.
It's interesting. I'm taking a look at the news here on polio vaccines, and the title is Bill Gates' latest challenge: polio.
Hmm. Well, interesting. Especially since Uganda was declared polio-free in 2006. And they've had two outbreaks now in the last 2 years.
That is very interesting. Here's another thing. I know why I was looking at polio is because I was taking a look at India. I think they are now vaccinating against polio in India. And just a couple of years ago, there were vaccinations going on in India, and a lot of people died.
Mm.
And so it was quickly withdrawn. However, it was made locally, and I think the new vaccine is being made by another company. And sorry, got low blood sugar right now, so I can't recall it, but I will try to come up with that by Monday, if you'll remind me. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know me. I'm a little old.
Well, I'm right there with you. The bifocals are on order.
I know. I didn't get bifocals. I just wear reading glasses all the time.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of odd things, there's a story that's been kind of floating around for the last couple of weeks and a video that's gone more or less viral on YouTube. And it's been sent to me a couple of times, and we had a listener who posted a comment at PIDradio.com to, I believe, yesterday's show or the day before, asking, you know, why we hadn't talked about it yet. And frankly, I really didn't know what to make of this. It was a speech given by Lord James of Blackheath in the House of Lords in the UK a couple of weeks ago, early November. And he was in the middle of a debate on the spending review. And so not exactly something that generates a lot of excitement. And there weren't very many lords present. You can only see one or two other guys in the video while he's talking. Lord James has apparently had a rather lengthy political career. You know, what little I can find out about him in my spare time doesn't indicate a history of conspiracy theorizing or insanity. So he appears to be your typical rather dull government, you know, a career government guy in the UK. He's got a pretty good reputation from what I can tell. But he got up in the House of Lords a couple of weeks ago, and he began talking about his background in the financial sector. He's got a history, in the city in London. Talks about money laundering and some experience that he's had in dealing with the money laundering of terrorist funds. And then he claims that he'd been contacted by a mysterious organization that he couldn't name, and so he gave it the pseudonym Foundation X. Foundation X. This group apparently wants to invest £5 billion, which is, what, about $7.5 billion, in the United Kingdom, with an extra $17 billion for hospitals, school, and a program called Crossrail by Crossrail before Christmas this year. And they've met with a cabinet minister to discuss this investment. The thing is, this money is supposedly backed by bullion-backed funds, gold bullion-backed funds. And by some estimates, this amount of money exceeds the total value of all of the gold bullion mined from the planet ever in history, total.
That's interesting.
So how did this Foundation X come up with all of this money? Can they possibly be legitimate? Apparently, Lord James believes that they are. This group only wants to meet with somebody who's either a head of state or one of the top six people in the world. Again, this is all part of the speech, and I'm going to put a link to this video.
Are they really short
in the show
with Grace
notes
Ann?
At PID Radio? Don't know.
Planet X?
There are people who are guessing and really scratching their heads about who this organization could possibly be and whether or not one of the theories that I've seen floated is that this is the Vatican. Now, there's no evidence to suggest that this is the case, and Lord James did not say that this is the case. He did say that the leader of the House of Lords, the Treasury Minister, Lord Sassoon, did in fact meet with the representative of Foundation X. Now, the Treasury has, and this is from an article or at least a blog post at The Guardian in the UK. This is not taken from some, you know, guy's website. The Treasury in the UK later came back and denied that a meeting with Lord Sassoon took place with this Foundation X. So the question is, what is going on? Why would an organization like this, if it exists, step forward and say, we're going to loan you £22 billion interest-free?
But we have to ask you these five questions.
And because he couldn't name his favorite color. Oh, well.
Blue. No, yellow.
So we'll leave you with that mystery to ponder for the weekend, and we will try to find out more about that between now and Monday. I presume we'll do a show on Monday, and then we'll take the rest of next week off on PID Radio.
I think that's a really good idea, given that you're going to be out of town, I don't know how to operate that board over there.
Well, we'll have to work on that over the weekend, just in case of emergency. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and Sam says woof. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod. www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. Yeah.